Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyar, America's right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic. I owe a dollar. I said it. Anti-choice talk show host. That makes $6 this month. Bob Enyar Live is an H-free zone that for the month of May. We cannot use the H word or the L word or the G word or the Q word. Any of those words. Can't use the T word either. So none of those words. Anyway, every time I do, I owe a buck. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. I'd like to talk to you about two crimes and the way the system is dealing with them. One, a rapist, a Philadelphia rapist, the Central City rapist, who terrorized women there for 3 summers. Then he came to Colorado and terrorized women in Fort Collins, a college town, terrorized college women by raping a number of them over 1 summer. And this guy was married, and his wife would wake up in the wee hours of the morning, and her husband was gone, and then she would hear the news in the next day or two about a rape happening at that time. And she was somewhat suspicious. Well, police finally arrested her husband, and now she obviously knows the truth that he's pled guilty. He's pled guilty, but to a plea bargain in Colorado. I want to give you some of the details of this guy's life, his crimes. And in Philadelphia, he murdered one of the women because the police think she tried to resist loudly. So he murdered her. And now we're hoping that in Philadelphia, at least they'll have the common sense, which they are lawyers, so it's unlikely, but we're hoping they'll have the common sense to go for the death penalty and execute this guy. But sadly, apparently, the Fort Collins police are working with the Philadelphia police on a plea bargain for this guy in Philadelphia. That's just discouraging. And the second crime is out of Phoenix. An older guy who's in prison, involved with sex charges and all, and kids. He wants to kill the sheriff who put him in jail in, what, Maricopa County, I believe. I used to live down there 10 years ago. And so he hatched a plot through the prison chaplain. Now, the chaplain, it's a Mormon chaplain, and he has a number of sex charges in his background. He was arrested on a felony sex charge 30 years ago and more recently arrested for exposing himself to a police officer. That was bright. And so the chaplain was helping the inmate by taking money out of the inmate's private bank account and using it to bail out another criminal. And they were going to... And here was the plan. This other criminal was going to kidnap the governor of Arizona. Kidnap the governor of Arizona, Jane Hull, and then keep her locked in the trunk of a car until she would agree to sign a pardon to Spring, the mastermind. And then, who, by the way, is a former military guy, just like the rapist. And then... Then the mastermind would get out of jail because the governor had pardoned him, and then he'd rob a bank and get $100,000 to pay for a hitman to murder the sheriff, Maricopa County Sheriff. So those are the two stories, and we'll quote a Maricopa County Sheriff's Department lieutenant who said about the chaplain helping out in the crime, the conspiracy, that there's really nothing you can do to fix this problem. All you can do is be aware of it and look out for it. Now, he's saying there's nothing he can do to fix the problem. We could fix the problem. If our criminal justice system followed the biblical model, we can fix the problem. What is the fix for that problem? What is the fix? Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Our first phone call, actually, we placed the call to get a news story. We got something across the wire, and our reporter in Hawaii has the story. Jason Jones, welcome to Bob and Yart Live.
It's great to be on your show again, Bob.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I just heard some news, and I was kind of shocked, and I thought I'd share it with you and your audience.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, Stephen Jay Gould.
Jason, my producer talked to you and said I'd want to hear this. So
sure.
Said it's big news.
It's pretty big news, I think.
Spring it on.
Norma McCorvey now is a pro-life activist.
Norma McCorvey, right. She was the Roe v. Wade.
Right.
And she's now a Christian pro-lifer.
Right.
Yeah, so what's this
so sort of, it's sort of like that. Stephen Jay Gould.
The evolutionist.
Yeah, he's now a creationist.
Come on! I've read some of his mindless books.
No, no, I know. He just published one like 2 weeks ago.
Well, I've read Ever Since Darwin and The Blind Watchmaker. Did he write that? Books like that. But anyway.
Yeah, and he just got one in under the wire, too.
And so he's now a creationist?
And he believes in God. Of course.
This is big. What happened?
He died.
Oh, Jason! Come on, you really had me there.
No, well, he passed away today.
I know. How could it be that a popular evolutionist would ever have the humility to correct himself publicly? That would be rather unusual. So Stephen Jay Gould is in hell right now.
Yeah, I would most likely.
Yeah, most
unless
likely.
Unless something happened that we don't know about.
If we don't know, but we're responsible for making decisions on what we know, not what we don't know.
Right, but with all the information that I have, he's in hell, and he's realized how wrong he was all along.
He is in hell. Now, I don't think that he regrets being wrong.
Really?
That's my take on it. Have you read the book called
The Great Divorce?
Yeah, by C.S.
Lewis. Yeah, I have.
And
I think about that often.
I do, too. That's a book that really changes your mindset about the lost and when they go to hell. Could you describe that book? It's a little book. Could you describe that book to the audience?
Yeah, well, it's people in hell have the opportunity to leave.
Yeah.
But they choose not to. And the part that really struck me.
Well, let's tell the audience first that C.S. Lewis, a brilliant Christian author, used to be an atheist, and now he's in heaven. He's died since, but he became a Christian. I think he was the chair of a medieval and English literature at Oxford. Mm-hmm. And he wrote brilliant books about God and Christianity. He wrote the Chronicles of Narnia, Screwtape Letters. And so he wrote this book called The Great Divorce about people in hell. They could congregate at a bus stop every day. A bus comes by, and they can get on the bus, and it goes to heaven. Every day, a bus leaves from hell to heaven. And they could get on the bus, and anybody in hell who wants to go to heaven, they can go. So you were about to say what struck you about the book.
Well, the protagonist wanted to meet famous people that he suspected might be there.
Right.
But their fires, they get further and further away till they're all alone.
Right.
And I think that was it Sartre who said hell is other people? Mm. And what I think C.S. Lewis said, no, hell is yourself.
Yeah.
And in the end, they can sit there and meditate on themselves and nothing else.
Right. Let's describe that, the gray city that C.S. Lewis painted hell to be. And this is all fiction, but it just helps you to get an insight into the people who don't want to live with God.
Right.
What are they like, and why do they end up in hell? They end up in hell because that's where they want to go. They want to live apart from God. So God is not, a guy who likes a woman and forces himself on her. It's like the rapist I'm talking about on tonight's show, this sick thing that raped women in Philadelphia and Fort Collins, Colorado. You know, a guy who would force himself on a woman, or a guy who traps a woman in his home and doesn't let her leave because he wants to be with her, those are sick people. And God is not sick. God's not going to force anyone to live with him in his house in heaven if they don't want to. And so those people get to live in hell. But could you describe a little bit more how C.S. Lewis described that great city of hell? Could you give us a little more detail?
Well, just from my recollections, because it's been a long time since I've read it.
Yeah.
And I actually wasn't even a Christian when I read it.
Wow.
But, yeah, it reminded me of sort of a Soviet Union-type city.
Mm.
And what I remember thinking is those were godless places.
Yeah, because it was all gray. But the people in hell, they had the ability to have any mansion they wanted. So they could they could have a mansion. And they would put their mansion next to somebody they thought they'd enjoy, somebody they'd like to get to know, like you said, maybe a celebrity. But within a short time, they'd meet for coffee, and pretty soon they'd get in fights, and then they'd hate one another. And so one or the other of them would move away, further away.
That's right.
And hell pretty soon became this vast, empty expanse of one home for a 2 days journey. And people just constantly moving away from one another. And so, because they just hated each other. And so in the middle of the town of hell, there was a bus stop, and people could go to the bus stop and get on the bus and go to heaven. And if they wanted to, they could stay in heaven. They get the bus ride for free. They go to heaven. They spend one day there. And at the end of the day, the bus goes back. But if they want, they could stay in heaven. I haven't read the book for probably 20 years. But what I recall, Jason, is that the people in hell, they didn't want anything to do with heaven. They hated it.
No, I was talking to a gentleman you had on your show last week.
Who?
From Hawaii, Gerald.
Oh, yeah, Gerald.
And he was asking me, why can't I go to heaven if I do what I want? And why is God like that and cruel like that? And I'm sorry, someone just walked in my office and started shouting at me. Why won't he let me into heaven? I said, because you don't want to go there. Why is he going to make you go somewhere you don't want to be?
Right.
But he wants to have his cake and eat it too, which you can't do.
He wants to
the advantages
live,
of closeness with God.
He wants to live where everyone loves God without loving God.
Yeah.
That's what he wants to do.
He wants to disobey God while everyone else obeys him.
Gerald is the guy. We talked with him for much of the show one night, and I forget the title of that show. Gerald, I don't know, maybe
God's Got My Tongue or something like that.
Oh, is that what it was?
Something like that.
All right, well, I'll look at it while we're talking here. But Gerald, after the show, he said to me that nature was his God. And so that's when I used the famous line about suggesting that the next morning, when he relieved himself, before he flushed, whatever reverence he thought was appropriate for his God, make sure he reveres his God at that moment before he flushes him down the toilet. If he thinks he should pray to God, whatever he should do, get a good look at God, at your God, and then flush him.
It's just worshiping the creation.
Yeah, in the most vulgar parts of creation.
Which the Umrikyo, for example, cults sometimes do.
Yeah.
The Umrikyo in Japan, the leader of the cult, sells his excrement.
Come on.
No, he does.
I'm sorry. I said, yeah. I misunderstood what you were saying.
Yeah, he sells it to his followers.
Wow.
And that's what happens when you get away from God. You just eventually become completely reprobate.
Here's the title of that show, I think. No Roots on Petrified Trees.
Okay.
That was the title of the show. So No Roots on Petrified Trees, May 7th. Yeah, so people in hell can go to heaven, but when they get to heaven, they're not going to want to stay there. Not in reality, they can't really go, but in the story. Mm-hmm. And it gave me such an insight. I'm so thrilled 20 years ago I got that insight because I realized that people who go to hell, they go there because they want to go to hell. They do not want to live with God. And so now Stephen Jay Gould is a creationist.
Right.
And he believes in God.
He knows there's a God. Just, but I guess he's still rejecting him.
Yeah, just like the devil believes in God. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it say that somewhere in the Bible?
Well, he knew God.
Yeah, right. In James chapter 1, that James, the Lord's brother, he writes that the devil, he knew God. But so it doesn't mean just knowing God. Well, I'm sorry, that's James chapter 2. Even the devil believes in God, but doesn't do him any good. You got to love God. So Stephen Jay Gould now believes in God, and he believes in creation.
And I just thought you should be the first to know, Bob.
Thank you, Jason. Great report from the field.
Well, God bless you. I'm sure you got a lot of callers.
Yeah, we do. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye. 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, Jeff, speak your mind.
Hello, Bob. How are you tonight?
Doing well, sir.
That's good. I just was calling to see if you had heard or followed the story of a 5-year-old girl out in California that was basically expelled from her religious school, private religious school, because her mother was a nude dancer.
Yeah, up in Sacramento.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked very briefly about that maybe Friday night or Thursday.
Well, I just saw her comment tonight's paper that I received here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It talked about that they were going to let the girl back in school for the last couple of weeks, and the mother agreed to quit dancing in that interim time. But the one thing that she said was that she doesn't think the church's reaction was very Christ-like.
Yeah, right.
That's noting that the supportive phone calls, letters, and offers of help she received come from outside the church.
Of course. Well, you know, liberals love it when women are sexually exploited by men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, liberals live for that. They love that. That way, they get to sexually exploit them. Like, say, Bill Maher on ABC is going off the air, right?
Right.
You know, he doesn't know that you could have a serious relationship with a woman. It's just prostitutes and strippers in the Playboy Mansion. And that's as serious a relationship as he's able to have with women.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, and I'm just using him as representative of liberals, they exalt those who sexually exploit women. And, of course, that's their way of hating God. Because God says we should love our neighbor, and that sexual immorality should be illegal.
Right.
So that school, it was good that they did what they had done by saying the 5-year-old girl cannot attend here. If the mother is destroying her family, we're not going to be a part of it by sort of covering it up. We're going to make it very clear to the mother that she's destroying her daughter's life.
Right.
And so the mother said, this is the quote I heard, Jeff. I heard the quote where the mother said, why should it be that my daughter should suffer for what I do?
Right. I heard that quote too.
What an idiot woman.
Yeah.
What does she think if your dad is a drug dealer? You think the kids are somehow insulated?
Right.
If your mom's an alcoholic, your mom's a stripper, you think it's not going to hurt the kids?
Right.
Of course it's going to hurt the kids. And in a way, well, I was thrilled that the school did that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they had been a little more firm when they spoke to the media.
Right. I saw them on the O'Reilly Factor the other night.
Oh, you did?
The mother, and then they had it must be the principal or whatever of the school, the pastor that's in charge of the school.
Now,
of course, Bill O'Reilly, you know, his Bible knowledge, he was saying, well, I don't think Jesus would have done this.
Well, yeah, he has no Bible knowledge. Bill O'Reilly is a liberal.
Yes.
He supports things that I can't even talk about.
Right.
He's pro-abortion. He's pro-evolution. He's anti-death penalty. He's just a liberal. Conservatives are seduced because there's a few liberals he doesn't like.
Right. And he starts out, and I've heard him do this more than once, well, I always ask, what would Jesus do? And I want to tell Bill O'Reilly, you have to read the Bible to know what Jesus would do.
Yeah, right. And obviously, what would Jesus do? And even, you know, those bracelets, WWJD, we had our church for about a year. We had WDJD, and we put it in our bulletin every Sunday.
Uh-huh.
It says, what did Jesus do? And we put all the harsh things that he did Sunday after Sunday. What did Jesus do? He did some pretty hardcore things. That's at Denver Bible Church, where I have the privilege of pastoring, and we meet there Sunday morning and Sunday nights with Sunday night Bible studies. We have just a great time here in Denver. So, Jeff, all right. Hey, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
Appreciate that. Hey, by the way, this Sunday night, no Sunday night Bible study in Denver because of Memorial Day. People are barbecuing and having a good time with their family. And but on Monday, we're going to go for our abortionist holiday home visit. Monday at 10 a.m., those of us in Denver, and any visitors, and we get visitors from out of state on a regular basis. In fact, I just got an email right here from a family in Indiana, the Shelp family. They're going to come to visit our church June 3rd, that week, and they're going to come to church. We're thrilled. This is great. But anyway, our holiday home visit is on Mondays at 10 o'clock in the morning. We meet at a Winchell's Donuts in the Denver area. In fact, where is that Winchell's? It's Monaco and Evans, 10 a.m. And then, you know, we have coffee, whatever. And the kids have donuts. The overweight adults have donuts. I try to avoid them. Then we're going to the abortionist home to visit. It's a holiday. You know, on the holidays, you visit people. And this is our holiday abortionist home visit. The 8 biggest holidays of the year, a group of us go and we visit the abortionist. Anybody could come. We've had hundreds and hundreds of people over the years. We've been visiting him since, let's see, when was it? Since maybe 1989 or 90. So a dozen years we've been visiting this abortionist at his home. And we do it for a couple reasons. And so we're going to do it this Monday for Memorial Day. And you could join us if you'd like. Come join Denver Bible Church for some, you know, neighborhood evangelism. And we do it for two reasons. A lot of Christians get upset at us, and they get very judgmental. And we say, don't judge. What are you getting so judgmental for? This is why we do it. For one, child killing. If child killing happens in your community, it should not happen without social tension. There should be a fight put up by those who know right from wrong. And our goal is to create as much social tension as we can over child killing, just like there was social tension over black slavery. And eventually, society got fed up with the tension and gave up and outlawed black slavery, even though the economy of the country was based on it. And we were told you could never outlaw black slavery. And it was the Christians who formed the Underground Railroad, like Harriet Tubman and others, and risked going to jail. And some of them did go to jail, some of them for many years, just like Christians who've gone to jail for saving babies at abortion mills. So we want there to be social tension. That's number one. And number two, when you protest at an abortionist home on Christmas morning, you know, when they'd be opening their gifts. That occasionally, not every year, but occasionally it makes the news. You might hear it on KOA Radio in Denver. Well, of course you'll hear it on KLTT Radio. That's our flagship station of the show, this Bob and Yurt Live that airs on Information Radio Network around the country. So you'll hear it on KLTT. But it makes the news. It makes the New York Times. It makes the local TV stations, radio, newspapers, not every holiday, but occasionally. And when young people go to medical school and they're urged to become abortionist, the vast majority of them absolutely refuse. Because when was the last time a dermatologist had protesters outside his home Christmas morning? When does that happen? That doesn't happen. So we have helped. And by the way, students say that one of the main reasons they don't go become an abortionist is because they don't want to put up with the domestic terrorists, as they call us. And so we're glad we have the bad reputation because we've helped who knows how many hundreds or thousands of young people to avoid becoming paid child killers. Goodbye. And we're back, but this is a commercial. So, live commercials during the show. It's not recorded. It's live. How can I prove it? How can I prove it's not recorded? Well, I could say what we were just talking about. Yeah, I can do that, right? Okay, so we were just talking about the latest terrorist threats that Dick Cheney is saying that there's a good chance. No, we weren't talking about that. We were talking about, well, Jason Jones called in with that report about Stephen Jay Gould now being a creationist. But he's in hell, and it's too late for him. But it's not too late for people you know if they're alive. As long as there's life, there's hope. After death, then that's it. That's it. God has put us here on this life to make a decision. And if you know people who are evolutionists, well, then you could consider getting one of our materials on evolution and creation and sort of boning up on that topic and then talking to them or letting them. For example, we have an album called Genesis Creation, 6 tapes about origins, evolution, creation, the just fun stuff. And so you pop in those tapes as you drive around town or in your home, and you'll learn about what God says in the Bible about this topic and what science says about it, and how to refute the evolutionist. It's pretty easy. So you can get Genesis Creation by calling us at 1-888-8-NYART, 1-888-836-9278, or you can call up. In fact, after the show, I try to stay in the studio for 10 minutes, and our prayer, it's a prayer too, is that we would get 2 people to sign up for our monthly Bible study tapes, which is $24.95 a month, or to sign up for the monthly sermons, which they've been a kick lately. You know, we had a sermon on Mormons not long ago. That was a classic. This past Sunday, we talked about people who've never heard the gospel. What happens to them when they die? What does a just God do to people who've never heard of the gospel? And so you could sign up for the sermons or the monthly Bible study or the best of Bob, the 8 best shows of the month. So please give us a call, 1-888-8-NYART. Get one of those or just say, hey, I just want the Genesis Creation album or the Flood. That's a lot of strong evidence for the validity of the Bible. And we have videos on the same topic, so give us a call. Welcome back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYART. Now that's 1-800-836-9278. We've got these 2 stories. The rapist here in Colorado who's headed to Philadelphia for a rape, for a murder trial, and all the rapes he committed there over 3 summers. And then in Arizona, the inmate who's in for committing sex crimes, and he plotted to have the governor of Arizona kidnapped. This was his plan. He's an ex-military guy. He's a 78-year-old Navy veteran, and he's in jail for sex with kids. Just great. So he was dealing with a Mormon chaplain who's obviously not a very good Mormon. And that's saying a lot because even the best Mormons go to hell. So if you're not a very good Mormon, you're in big trouble. Anyway, this guy has a track record of sex crimes recently and going back 30 years. And so the chaplain agreed to take money out of the 78-year-old child molester's bank account and to use the money for bail to get another guy out of jail. who is supposed to kidnap the governor of the state. Now, that's a pretty aggressive crime. That's ambition for you. And he's going to kidnap her because they want to get her to sign a pardon for the 78-year-old child molester. And then after she signs the pardon, of course, as soon as they released her, she'd just say, well, it was a forgery. I was forced to sign it. So they're going to kill her. And then he's going to get out of jail because she signed a pardon for him right before she was kidnapped and murdered. Now, criminals, I just said to my wife earlier, not even 20 minutes before the show, we were talking about criminals in another case, actually. It was a young teenager. And we were saying that criminals, most of them are not very good problem solvers. They're just not good problem solvers. So not only are they sinful, they have the flesh, but also they're often stupid. And so this guy is going to kidnap the governor, have her sign a pardon, and then he's going to use the pardon to get out of jail after he murders her. Yeah, that'll work like just perfectly, clockwork. Then he's going to rob a bank for $100,000 and pay a hitman to murder the sheriff of Maricopa County, the guy who got him locked up in the first place. So that's quite a plan. And in the sheriff system, there's a lieutenant who is quoted in this Denver Post article out of Phoenix. And the lieutenant in Maricopa County, that's where Phoenix is, Mesa, Chandler, I think those cities. I used to live down there. That's when I worked for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company on the Apache helicopter. Ah, the good old days. That was fun. Just helping our pilots to blow things up, shoot Hellfire missiles and 30-millimeter machine gun mounted on the nose. Just a great helicopter. At any rate, the lieutenant down there said about this problem with the chaplain helping an inmate conspire to kidnap the governor. He said, well, there's nothing you can do to fix a problem like this. The only thing you can do is to be aware of it. Well, I don't know if he's saying that, if he's telling us the limitations of his ability to think through a problem. Because not only are criminals bad problem solvers, but lawyers are bad problem solvers. They've created for us our national crime epidemic. Our legislators are bad problem solvers. And if you're not very smart, then the best you can do is find someone smarter than you and listen to that person. I mean, that's a plan. If you know that you're sort of dumb, if you know that you make decisions through your life and you just keep messing yourself up, then find someone smarter than you. Preferably, find a good church. Find a church where people take their Bibles on Sundays, where they're against evolution and they're against abortion. Find a church like that. And then become friends with people in the church and do what they tell you to do, whatever it is. If you're stupid, if you're a stupid person, acknowledge that you keep ruining your life and then have the humility to accept counsel from other people whose lives are not in tatters. Well, that's what I've tried to do. I was really good at ruining my life. And I've tried to humble myself, take advice from God out of the Bible and from other people around me whose lives were not in ruins. And I thank God that, you know, the Bible says that there's safety in counsel from a number of people. And I get counsel when I have problems. I call mature Christian men and I ask them for advice. Well, the Bible says, and the Bible could counsel this lieutenant. The Bible says that when people commit crimes like these, you execute them. You don't lock them up for 20 years. You lock up a man for 20 years. He has 20 years to think through how to get vengeance or how to hurt people in jail. He becomes more vicious than he was before you locked him up. And so if you had executed this guy years ago, he would not have been alive to conspire to kidnap the governor. And the chaplain, for the crimes he's committed, he might have been dead too. But on the other hand, if you had that kind of a vigorous law enforcement system, then chances are, according to God's promise in the Bible, these guys wouldn't have become criminals in the first place. They would not have become criminals in the first place. So that's what, if our law enforcement folks would say, you know, we're just not that bright. Because no matter how much money we spend, no matter how many buildings we build, no matter the jails, well, they just built a new one here in Jefferson County, Colorado. And when they were, I was in jail, in fact, when they were talking about building the new jail. And I put up a sign on the, in the, not in my cell, but in the day room where you get to play, you get to go outside and play basketball and volleyball and handball. And in the day room, you get to watch cable TV, and they got pornography in there, and you get to gamble. A lot of gambling going on in jail. At any rate, I wrote a sign that said, if you build it, they will come. If you build it, they will come. Put it up on the wall. One of the guards took it down. Because if you build a jail, don't worry, it'll be filled. Because our legislatures and our judges and even the prosecutors are not smart enough to get rid of the crime epidemic. They're just not smart enough, and they don't have the humility to believe what God says. So we're stuck. We're stuck until enough of us somehow, it's not going to be a majority. That'll never happen. Because the majority, it just doesn't happen. You don't have righteousness brought in by an act of the majority. It does not happen in history. When good things happen, it's because a minority put their mind to it and they didn't give up until it was accomplished. Like in Israel, how evil Israel was almost all the time in the Bible. And the times it became righteous was when one man was determined to make it righteous. And that's what would happen. Oh, and all right, so let's go to the phones here. In South Bend, Dean, speak your mind.
Hey, Bob.
Howdy.
God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
I saw a great political cartoon in the newspaper today.
Yeah.
And it showed this one guy in the lab, and he was saying he had a clone there. And there was a clone of Bill Clinton, and this guy was asking him, he said, why in the world did you make a clone of Bill Clinton?
Right.
And the response was, well, there was a lot of DNA samples out there.
Now, hey, that's pretty good, Dean. But you know what that makes me think of immediately is Juanita Broderick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he raped her.
Right. Bill Clinton raped Juanita Broderick, who was going to be a campaign worker back in 1978 in Little Rock,
right,
in the Camelot Hotel. And her life just turned upside down instantly. And she went from a Clinton supporter to horrified and filled of hatred toward him, and as well as her soon-to-be husband. And Clinton has tried to approach her a couple times over the years to soothe things over, and that didn't work. And the evidence that he raped her is awfully compelling.
Mm-hmm.
But he had told her that he had the mumps when he was a kid and that he was sterile. So I've often wanted to do a paternity test with his DNA in Chelsea.
Can a Christian lie without sinning? If the Nazis were at your door, is it a sin to lie to them so they don't
find the thing you've been? Hey, let's stop the pre-recorded commercial. Now that was a spot for our Nicer Than God album, audio album, 6 tapes. A Nicer Than God. We talk about judging. Is it okay to judge? Now that's at the top of the Ten Commandments, don't judge, according to liberals. That's the verse that Hillary Clinton would quote. When she gets to quote a verse, she quotes, don't judge. In fact, all of Hollywood. In fact, Planned Parenthood. In fact, all people who hate God when they get a chance to quote a Bible, that's the preferred verse, and that's become the number one most popular verse. It used to be John 3:16. Used to be John 3:16. But Al Gore, when he announced he was running for president a couple years ago, and he gave his speech in Spanish and in English, and he said his favorite Bible verse was John 16:3, which, of course, his speech writers, they would see it at an NFL football game, John 3:16, but they forgot. So they put John 16:3, and Al Gore doesn't know it, so he said John 16:3. And that verse says that they do these things to you because they do not know the Father nor me. So that's Al Gore's favorite verse. Anyway, Jesus commands us to judge in the Bible. He says, judge with righteous judgment. But Christians are so wimpy today, and they're so liberal that they reject all the commands where Jesus gave them to judge. They reject them all. Well, we have this album called Nicer Than God. You can call us at 1-888-8-NYART, 6 audio tapes, find about it, judging and forgiving, and it's fun. Welcome back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. All right. Now we go back to Dean here. Hey, Dean.
Hello?
Hey, is this Dean?
No, this is Mark.
Oh, Dean. We were done with Dean. Sorry, Mark.
That's okay.
Welcome. I thought Dean was still online.
Well, oh, okay.
You're from Niles, Michigan, right?
Yeah, listening on WHME. That is correct.
All right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Hey, in my church, there's a new lady pastor who came. The other minister left to go to Ohio. And all of a sudden, in the church program and whatnot, there started appearing references to transgenderism.
Oh, no, come on. Don't tell. Hey, we can't even use that word on the show this month, Mark.
We can't?
No, we can't use the H word. And that's close. The T words are close enough to the H word. But okay, so you made the point. You got a woman pastor, which
I'm uncomfortable with even in and of itself.
Well, uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable if the temperature in the house gets above, let's say 81.
Yeah.
But if I had a woman pastor, I'd be out of there.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm wondering. See, she hasn't even been hired as pastor. She's just an interim.
And she's obviously, I mean, women pastors are a symptom of rebellion against God. And she obviously will do what she can to promote sexual immorality, because that's the best way to rebel against God, because then you get people to destroy themselves.
Well, what's funny is she's only an interim. She hasn't even been hired, and she already moved and remodeled the pastor's office.
Right. Well, all those, yeah.
Which is pretty presumptuous, I think.
Well, that presumption is, I mean, she shouldn't be a pastor.
Well,
what's wrong? Hey, let me ask you this, Mark. Mm-hmm. She's a basket case. We know that. Let's forget about her for the rest of the call. What's wrong with the men in your church? What's wrong with them?
Well, this just became revealed that this is a very new development.
What is?
This all of a sudden beginning these oblique references to homosexuality.
No, I mean having a woman be the pastor. What doesn't your church have men in it, leaders?
Yeah. Well, see, she was only supposed to be an interim, so people didn't pay much attention.
Well, it's only supposed to be interim. Well, you know, in the Bible, there's a curse that God says there's a curse.
Uh-huh.
And among all the terrible things that's going to happen, he said, and then your women shall lead you.
Uh-huh.
That's a curse. Because God, I mean, women are equally valuable as compared to men,
mm-hmm.
and equally worthwhile. But God made men to be in charge, to be the head of the household and the head of the church. And if there is no man to lead, then a woman has to be the head of the household. But if there is a man and he lets the woman be the head of the household, he's not a man.
Let me ask you this. The fundamental question is should my family leave or should we force her to leave?
There's my guess. Since your church is this week spiritually that they would choose a woman, number one.
Even as an interim.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And especially this woman who, you know, she didn't become like this overnight.
Right, but she just revealed her hand. It was kept.
I will not give the elders of that church not one bit of understanding.
It'd be better for a family like mine, in your opinion, to leave rather than.
Oh yeah.
Rather than have her leave.
Oh, your church. Let me guess. This is my. I don't know your church, right? But I'd say your church is either dead or well on the way to dying.
Yeah, I would say at the very least it's symptomatic of something worse.
Yeah, and let's remember when Jesus said, well, warning, Will Robinson, there's Bible verse up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bob and Yurt Live that you would censor anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public, so this warning gives you fair notice, raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. All right, Mark, do you remember when Jesus said you can't put new wine in old wineskins?
I believe so,
Yeah, and that has the main meaning of that is that his blood, that's the gospel, the new covenant, and it doesn't really fit in the old covenant, in the symbols of the old covenant. It sort of bursts them asunder. It breaks them apart.
Right.
That's his main meaning, but there's a secondary meaning to that. You cannot put new wine in old wineskins. A church or a Christian hospital or a Christian university, that's like a wineskin. It's something tangible that you put the gospel in, and then you could share it between people. Like wine, it slips through your fingers.
Right.
If you didn't have a wineskin or a bottle, and you can't really pass it around in your hands because it all spills out. So in order to share wine, you put it in the wineskin, and then you could share it with people. And with the gospel, the way we are, our human culture, and we're social creatures, we put the gospel in things, in institutions, like a hospital. And we start a Christian hospital. And in a certain amount of time, that hospital is no longer Christian. Have you noticed that kind of effect?
Oh, definitely. A lot of hospitals were started by Christians, but you'd never know it.
Right. How about universities?
Yeah.
Like, let's name a couple, like Harvard.
Right.
Christian, Yale, Princeton, Christian. And dare I mention Notre Dame?
Yes, you dare. Hesburgh worked that place over quite well.
Yeah, I can't even say on this show the kind of, you know, advocacy that some of the priests there will make for immoral things.
Yeah.
But the same thing is true. It's true of hospitals. It's true of schools. And it's true of churches. If a really good church is planted and it's bringing people to the Lord, it honors God, after a period of time, it will die. It will. All Christian universities die. All Christian hospitals eventually promote abortion. All Christian churches die. And when they die, of the hundreds of Christian colleges and universities founded in America, Mark, here's my question to you. Mm-hmm. Of the hundreds that were founded that have gone atheist or godless or sexually immoral, how many of them over the decades and the centuries, how many of them have become Christian again?
Oh, I'd have to say probably round about none.
And let's see, you're exactly right. Round about none. And let's say exactly why that is. Jesus told us why. Because you cannot put new wine in old wineskins. You can't do it because they'll burst asunder. So the gospel is always new. It's always valid. And we create institutions to put it in, like a church, and the institution is not the gospel. The church you go to or that we have, it's not the gospel. It's just a wineskin to put the gospel in.
Right. It's a good metaphor.
Yeah. And so because the church is this cultural, social entity, and it picks up aspects of our culture, like a certain kind of music we'll play at our church, and we dress a certain way, and we like to do certain things, and none of those things in and of themselves are sinful, but they become a big part of the church. And pretty soon, after enough years or a generation or two, people at the church will care more about what kind of music you play than about the gospel. Because the church gets old. It picks up the cultural idiosyncrasies around it, and the church, the institution, gets old, and pretty soon it's dead. And so when you tell me your story, I know, even though, and you could feel free to name your church if you wanted to, but even not knowing the name of the church, it's a dead church. And
yeah,
your family...
on route to oblivion at the very least.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds to me like... it'd be better for me to find a better place.
I would do it.
Than to try and, you know, I've one last thing I'll throw in. I think one of the main obstacles to a lot of the religious revival we have is this baggage of Darwinism hanging over our heads.
Right.
It's just such a, I think Ken Ham is really onto something with Answers in Genesis.
Yeah, he's great. AIG.org, is it?
Yeah, I just think that is such an obstacle to a lot more of the reforms that we want.
Yeah, because if people believe that we're just animals, then they could act like animals.
Now, did Stephen Jay Gould really embrace creationism?
Well, did you hear the full story? He died today.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, he died. He's dead.
Oh, my gosh, I didn't know.
He's dead.
Oh.
And so that's why now he believes in creation.
Are we being a little... sarcastic here, or did he...
No, he really died.
Yeah.
And now he believes in creation. He's in hell. He knows there's a God. He rejected that there was a God.
So he didn't concede that evolution was false before he died?
No.
Oh.
No, he died.
Oh. Okay.
Right? Atheists who die, when they die, they know then that they were wrong. They're not repentant. They still hate God in hell. And Stephen Jay Gould will hate God as much in hell, if not more, than he did when he was on earth.
I guess he and Carl Sagan are in the same boat now.
You're not kidding. You know, I've got a friend who's a newscaster at KOA Radio, where the Rush Limbaugh affiliate in Denver.
Uh-huh.
And when Carl Sagan died, she wrote the news like she did for years.
Uh-huh.
And she read the news at the top of the hour.
Uh-huh.
And she said the infamous Carl Sagan, and she called him infamous on a major radio station.
Whoa.
And, you know, and that was great because she's a strong Christian. Her husband was an atheist, and she used to listen to my show. He started listening to Bob and Yurt Live, and he became a Christian, and now he's a strong advocate of creation, refuting evolutionists. So she called Carl Sagan the infamous Carl Sagan, and she got flack from it from listeners who were really angry.
I met him working as a reporter. I met Carl Sagan at a house in Michigan years ago.
Oh.
And I asked him about a report that was floating around on the AP wire back then about people questioning the Big Bang.
Yeah.
And he had a fit. I mean, he literally started spitting nails at me.
Yeah, because when scientists say, well, here's the problem with the Big Bang, because it doesn't work scientifically.
Uh-huh.
And when those stories come out, right, they get emotional.
Yeah, he really went off on me, and I wasn't even questioning the Big Bang myself. I was just talking about some other person who was questioning it.
Right.
He had a major fit.
Right, an emotional tantrum, which we've seen in many people who supposedly are scientific about their origins. Hey, Mark, we're almost out of time, but let me real quick tell you, a writer for Scientific American called, we were to debate on the show some months back, evolution, creation, and origins. And I asked him, well, this was my first question. I said, could you at least give the Bible credit when it said, don't worship the sun. The sun is not a god. It's a light. I said, can you at least give the Bible that credit? His name is Michael Shermer.
And what did he say?
He said, no. He said, the sun is not a light.
Oh, I see.
How's that one for the cowardice, the intellectual cowardness of the evolutionists? Thank you, Mark.
For not being a light, I can see awfully well.
Yeah, you're not kidding. God bless you. So, neat call from Niles, Michigan. Yeah, this rapist, he should be executed. And why would prosecutors in Fort Collins even be talking plea bargain to Philadelphia, where he murdered a woman. Just for the kidnap, just for the rape, he should be executed. This is Bob in here reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.